We will try and make sure the conversation is as interesting as we can make it. We have a set number of topics that we propose to discuss with you, and of course the idea is to have a free-flowing discussion and no monologue, certainly from me or anything like that. So perhaps I can just introduce the first topic and then maybe turn to Peter and Rod and ask you if you want to make some comments and take it from there. The first topic that we had, I shall read it out, was the role of the GNSO community in addressing any new items that come out of the GAC board discussions on new GTLDs, more specifically, to the extent that there are any inconsistencies between the policy advice given by the GNSO and what the ICANN board agrees to do with the GAC, how will those matters be handled? Also, how should the GNSO community factor GAC advice earlier into the policy development process, and should it try to?
Okay, well, thank you. Again, thank you very much for having us. I hope this doesn't turn into... The idea of this session is so that members of the council can have an exchange with members of the board. So I've indicated that, you know, board members should chime in on these things. This is to try and get more and more interaction, and people get to see that, you know, there is, in fact, an entire board behind us. On the actual topic itself, I think just a couple of quick things. First of all, it is very speculative. It starts with the assumption that there is going to be a difference between the board and the GAC, and of course that is a theoretical possibility, but we obviously are working very hard with the GAC while we're here to try and bridge that, not just because we have an obligation under the bylaws to work in good faith to do that. We actually do want to get to a solution where members of the GAC are fully behind and supporting the new TLD program. It's actually obviously very good for everybody if there's a common thrust to that. So it may well be that there isn't anything at the end of that where we are differing. If there are, the next question is it going to be on something that's inconsistent with GNSO advice? If it isn't, then we wouldn't think there was any need to come back and ask the GNSO. And, of course, we bear in mind constantly the principles that came up from the GNSO. And what we've been mostly talking about since then is sort of implementation. And many of the difficulties that we have, or differences rather, that we have with GAC are about implementation, which are probably not matters that we would want to come back and talk to the GNSO about anyway. So, and I'm pretty sure you don't want yet another request from the board to help with one of these things. So the chances of there being a fundamental disagreement with any of the sort of the major principles which would sort of make us feel that we had to come back and get further input, we think is reasonably low. So I guess I'll probably stop there and hand over to Rod and other board members about that. I think as I say, it's based on a couple of speculations which we don't think are really that likely. Rod.
Sure. Understandable question. I think, you know, Peter's given a good framework, which is to say that, you know, we're really looking at the implementation phase at this point. And clearly, if there were any, you know, glaring discrepancies, you know, between issues that are being considered by the board based on the GAC advice, you know, I think that we would all be, you know, open to that. But the goal right now is to take the advice, work it out with the GAC, see how the draft applicant guidebook can be enhanced consistent with the policy advice that your group, the GNSO, has already given. And by the way, thank you, thank Jeff, thank Mary, and the whole GNSO Council. We thank all of you for this opportunity to get together with you today. But there may be some other board members that have been involved in this process since 2005 or other times subsequent. 2000. Okay, Bruce, tag, you're it.
So, Bruce, do you want to chime in, or do any of the GNSO councillors want to come in on this? Just raise your hand, let me know.
I'm sorry, I'm a little bit late, so I might have missed the context of your earlier discussion, but I think there is a difference between the policy recommendations that have come through the PDP and then advice that we've got from both individual constituencies, from the GNSO Council with respect to the STI and various other things. With respect to the PDP recommendations, at least as far as I know, there's no nothing contemplated right now to change any of those. If we did, interestingly enough, if you read the bylaws, we'd end up exactly the same thing we're doing with the GAC. There's actually a formal part of the bylaws that deal with if the board doesn't go with the PDP from the GNSO. So we actually have almost an exact... If you read the text, it's very similar. But we'd be having a face-to-face meeting, we'd have our scorecards, and we'd be doing all the same thing. So you can imagine the board doesn't really want to do that. the direct answer to your question is it's actually in the bylaws. We have to go through a proper consultation with the GNSO if we change your policy recommendations, which I don't believe we're doing. If you're then talking about advice... then we're getting advice from GAC, we're getting advice from GNSO, we're getting advice from particular constituencies, we're getting advice from individual companies within those constituencies. And then it's about really the next couple of days is trying to say we'd like to give everyone an opportunity, having seen where we are with the GAC board consultation, to give their feedback, particularly at a constituency level, I think is important. Because it's going to be very hard, Stefan, for you to do that as a GNSO in a short period of time. And I've seen you've been working on a more general statement, but I think there's value from individual constituencies, whether it's the registries or the business constituency, to be able to say, section 5 of the scorecard, we think that's good or bad or whatever. That's really useful feedback for us.
Thanks very much, Bruce. We did discuss two things that you just mentioned today during our sessions today. The statement that the GNSO could make as a council, as you said, we have been working on that, and the message has been passed on to the individual stakeholder groups and constituencies that make up the GNSO, so that if they want to comment or pass on a message directly on specifics such as you mentioned, that is in the works, and we had noticed that part of the bylaws that you referenced, so we are aware of that. Jeff.
Thanks. I do agree that so far that everything we've seen, nothing contradicts the advice that we gave 2007, almost 4 years ago. One thing I want to ask, and I asked staff this when they were in here earlier, is that to the extent that we can help with any of these policy implementations, we'd like to be brought in, hopefully in advance of the final guidebook. There's a couple things implementation wise, and I know Bruce knows some of these, where you agreed with the GAC as far as some, this is mundane detail, but a right of first refusal for a URS. A complainant that wins a URS proceeding, that if the registration expires at that point, there'd be right of first refusal of the complainant. There's actually some tricky implementation details on that as to how a registry actually does that. It sounds like a pretty easy concept, and we can obviously work that out and figure out how to do it. It would just be great that once you do come to agreement, that now ICANN staff comes to the registries and registrars to ask how do we implement that, as opposed to going in the room, writing this up, and then asking for comment. We can short-circuit a lot of that just by asking us the questions.
Rita.
Thanks. I also apologize for being late. I can't believe Peter started on time. Maybe it was you, Stefan. I want to reiterate what I think others have said, which is the board's really conscious during this process of not going against what the GNSO policy has clearly said, and it's a tough balancing act, and we're trying to sort of get information from all sources to make people happy, but we are very conscious of your very important role in this, and we're trying to honor that as best we can. One of the things that, as you know, the board's doing is setting up these public sessions over the next couple of days. So I think it would be great for all of you to come participate actively in that. There's going to be, hopefully, and I think there's been an email to the SO representatives to have, sort of a member appointed that can go and can speak to where the board is on the response to the GAC scorecard and kind of some of these issues, because I think we're getting to sort of the final stages here, and we want to have as much as we can on the public record of people, stating their positions as to where we are. And if you do feel as though we're going contrary to GNSO advice, state that, because we want as much input as we can now.
Thanks, and yes, that was me starting the meeting on time. Bertrand.
Very, very quickly, it's clear that the policy framework of the GNSO is and remains the policy framework for the new GTLD program. I think you will hear that, and it's good to repeat it because it's clear. The second thing is that there is obviously no desire, neither on the board side nor, I think, in anybody in the community, to go through a sort of round of public comments that would only delay anything. The thing that the Brussels meeting produced was a very interesting back and forth between the scorecard and the comments from the board on the scorecard that allows the GNSO and other actors in the community to actually screen both the requests and the comments. And as Jeff was mentioning, there are some cases where you may spot an implementation problem or potentially, and I was glad to hear that it is apparently not the case, an evolution that may be of real concern because it's getting away from the policy. I think the very important thing during this this week is to combine the two formats that will take place. The format of the ongoing GAC board interaction and intersperse the two community opportunities for interaction, where it will be the very good moment for the community, GNSO, but also ALAC and any other actor, to interact and give comments regarding possible implementation modalities or possible solutions to one element that we're still struggling to find the right balance. So I think the format is emerging with those two things in parallel, with one day with comments, one day GAC board interaction, then another opportunity for comments and another GAC board interaction. And it's how we will combine this that we will use at best during the week.
Thank you, Bertrand. Any other comments on this?
This is Guo Weiwu, and I think about that issue you're raising about, like, what is a GNSO and can help in to help the go with GAC consultations. I thought about this as something is one kind of the positive message we actually can deliver to the, you know, the people outside who is worried about something like the new GTLD developer will have some kind of trademark violation or customer protection or something like that. I'm thinking about that there might be we all GNSO we can think about that is we might be need to start to think about to launch a protection mechanism to protect the customer, also the trademark holders. Why? It's because I think the problem of those of the issue actually is not from the registry or the ICANN certified registrar. I strongly believe, you know, because the registrar and also the ICANN registrar actually is doing quite good behavior. The real problem actually is from the reseller. You know, reseller, they are not really binding by, you know, the our contract or something like that. And another group of the people is not also binding is the CCTLD registrar. That is not the registrar under the ICANN structures. These two kind of group, they are selling the domain name. And in many cases, for my personal, my friend or my customer or something like that, they actually send me the email show that, you know, they try to squatting those of the domain name. And you look at that, actually it's a reseller or some kind of the CCTLD registrar is not under the control. And so, but the problem is that they are selling the name is owned by our registry. Okay, it's like .com, .info, or whatever. So I think that is a very important for us as a whole communities. We should have some kind of the protection mechanism to involve the registry, registrar, also the CCNSO, come together to say, you know, we like to provide a protection mechanism, whatever the call center if you receive that kind of reseller or that CCTOD registrar selling your name, we are willing to take the responsibility to resolve it. And in that case, we actually deliver a message to the market, also to the government. We are responsible communities. So I think that is something I would suggest that we can think about.
Thank you very much. I think that will probably generate a few comments. And I see some hands going up, Saheed, and then John.
I wanted to thank you. My name is Ai Jamil. I'm a BC councillor. And I just wanted to respond to the previous comment made by board member, the honorable board member. I think it's absolutely right. Coming from a developing country, we get a lot of these sort of fake renewal notices coming from certain Asian countries without naming them. And basically, when you're dealing with developing country individuals, they don't know whether this is real or not. The level of awareness is much lower there than maybe in many developed countries. And I think this is a major issue. Just to sort of bring this to the attention of the board, this was discussed by the GNSO, and there was a recommendation made in the RAP. Unfortunately, the response we received from the compliance department of ICANN was that this is just not something they can deal with because they don't have the necessary enforcement clauses within the agreement that ICANN has with the registrars, for instance. And so the issue of the resellers is a major issue, et cetera. And if the board considers this as an important issue, I would encourage them to talk to the compliance department. Pam Little, who was giving a presentation, was available yesterday, gave a very concise and a very good explanation as to why not. And I think that we would be happy here, seeing that you're raising an issue we're interested in addressing. So thank you for bringing that up.
So, Jonathan.
Yeah, just to piggyback on the exchange between or the response of Zahid to Kowei's comment, interestingly enough, I was attending an ALAC meeting this morning where this very same subject emerged. And so the question of the resellers and their responsibility and how to handle the problems related to the resellers in the absence of a compliance mechanism is a very important topic, and one of the concepts that was emerging is the notion of the chain of accountability. I don't know how it can be explored, but there is a sort of cascade of responsibility that has to be handled because every actor is in a certain way responsible to or of the actors that are lower in the chain. It's not for the moment to discuss this, but I sense from the different discussions that there is a common concern or common interest that will become even more important in the environment of the new GTLD program. While I have the mic, I forgot to say something earlier. In the discussion in Brussels between the GAC and the board, one of the newest idea that emerged was this notion of an early warning phase, very early discussion on the sensitivities of strings. I would be very interested, because we didn't get then into the details of how that could be implemented, to get an initial feedback from the GNSO council members on, having read what was discussed, how you feel about it, how you see problems, or on the other hand, opportunities to use that to streamline the process and handle the delicate cases, for instance.
Bertrand, would it be helpful if you would just explain 5 seconds what the early warning system is? Because I don't think all the GNSO council members were in Brussels. So.
There has been a long discussion, as you know, regarding the whole notion of sensitive strings, putting under the expression sensitive strings the whole range between the former REC6 discussion to things that are more sensitive to local governments or local communities and so on. And one of the ideas that emerged was actually an elaboration, a proposal from the GAC, was to somehow use in a slightly stronger way the initial public comment period that is already in the applicant guidebook. If you look at the workflow, there is a 45-day period of public comments that are open to all actors. And the other dimension was to also open the possibility for the GAC to intervene early on to flag the sensitivity regarding a given issue. The reason why I asked to explore this further is actually in Brussels, we didn't get into much more detail than that. And I think it's going to be one of the very important elements that we will have to discuss this week, because it is actually implementing in a certain way the distinction between the sensitivities of the objections that may be related to the string as opposed to the sensitivities or objections that may be related to a given applicant. And so in order to avoid uncertainty for the applicants, if an objection to the string is happening very late in the process when they've already been vetted for many other issues, it seemed important to clear as early as possible the question of the string. And the question is, how implementable is this? What are the initial reactions?
Do any council members want to respond or comment? Ching.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Patron, for the comment. And I see the discussion is coming, switching from the, we are talking about the reseller, and then the topic is moving towards to the 45 days early warning sort of the mechanism. And I would like to quickly comment on that. Just a sort of a minor observation of the consistency of what type of the mechanism being put in place. For example, we've talked about and also shown in the applicant guidebook saying that if any GOTOD or regional TOD or city names need to get a pre-approval or a non-objection status from the government, and we are hearing the addition of adding early warning mechanism in the evaluation period, in a 45 days period. So it seems that there are two sets of safeguards being introduced, and I was just wondering if there's just one or maybe one simplified way for the applicant just to get to know that if there's just one set of safeguard or mechanism in being set, then everyone can, follow that path and, just within that 45 days, and the string will be evaluated for whatever mechanism being set. So the standards will be consistent.
Thank you. Adrian.
Adrian Kinderis, Registrar Stakeholder Group. For mine, Bertrand, it's about what standard is applied that I think is the biggest implementation issue, is to how you discern between something that's going to fall into this category that would activate a flag, and how is that applied consistently. That I can't reconcile that at the moment, and need to put some more thought into it. But that for me is the key issue here: is how do you get consistency across that one key point that activates the flag?
Could you maybe clarify just a little bit what you mean by inconsistency potentially?
So when is how do you define something that is what's the term that you used? Sensitive. So how do you define sensitive? Is effectively the key. And then how do you apply that definition consistently?
Mike.
Well, Adrian, it's a pity that you weren't in Brussels, and maybe some of your colleagues can fill you in, but I think the whole point around the early warning is to try and avoid that subjectivity of creating criteria and trying to then use criteria and vet names against criteria when this whole process is around innovation. And the idea was, instead of giving the GAC a second bite at the cherry, is really for them to use this process and to tweak the process slightly So it becomes less of an early warning to them, but in fact an early warning to us and the applicant, that the GAC considers this sensitive, so that they're aware on day one when the application comes in that there is an application for a string, this is it, and they start responding to it immediately. And I think it's been one of the issues that the community struggled with, is that the GAC tends to go through an incredibly long, laborious process, and we only get an outcome to a timescale which doesn't necessarily accord with the same timescale to which other people within the process work. So the idea is almost giving the GAC the ability to say, we consider this sensitive. We haven't reached a final decision if we're going to actually launch an objection, but the early warning would allow them literally, when it comes in on day one, to raise the issue on day two, we consider this sensitive, we're going to be looking at this more carefully. So it almost places the onus on them rather than we're now going to be creating a new set of criteria and functionality to allow for the determination of what is or isn't sensitive and that gets treated differently. It's the GAC's responsibility to notify applicants as well as staff and the community that this is something that is going to require specific attention.
Bertrand's point then, it's not so much an implementation issue that we need to discuss, merely one that the GAC needs to sort out. You're providing them the opportunity. That's the key here. Exactly. And it's up to them as to how they use that opportunity. Am I clear now?
Is it just to clarify further, is it a case of learning from our past mistakes in a way and avoiding certain situations that I obviously won't name, that if this system had been in place, perhaps we could have avoided that? Does that make it clearer for people?
What past mistakes?
How long you got, Bruce?
No.
Any further comments? So perhaps we can now move to the next topic, which is one that I think is important to all of us, obviously in this room, which is the one topic dealing with volunteer fatigue and the need for prioritization of our work. And it's something that at council level we have been struggling with extensively for over a year now, trying to find ways to prioritize our work efficiently, trying to make sure that those pending projects that we do have on our list do get done and have the appropriate resources. But it also leads into the fact that giving volunteers enough bandwidth to just be able to read the stuff that comes at us. Just at that simple level, that is. So it's something that I think we all have as a worry now, is how can we both be, and I'm sure it's even worse for the board, how can we all be expected to continue to make intelligent contributions to the work that's going on and have to digest all this stuff that's coming. So, great.
Before you move on to that, one thing you didn't discuss, and the last thing was the tail end of that conversation about how does the GNSO community factor GAC vice earlier into the develop policy and development process. That wasn't addressed. Speaking as the co-chair of the board GAC working group, I can tell you that the GAC is very interested in that, and we've had some very, very long discussions about how they can do that. Quite obviously, they really have a problem in giving you advice in the terms of which they speak of advice. There has been participation by GAC members in various GNSO PDPs, and for that matter, the GAC members have also participated in the IP registry's policy processes as well. So there is a real strong desire to find a way to do that, because they fully recognize that there are some legitimate concerns of governments that are factored into the policy discussions at a much earlier stage, are much easier to be accommodated, and situations are worked out so that you don't have, at the end when the policy is fully formed and presented to the board for approval and ratification, that at this point the GAC is now giving, is in a position of giving advice, and then you have this large high-level conflict. So I would say that anything that the GNSO can think of in terms of ways of facilitating getting that input into the discussion without considering it to a large extent to being GAC advice or being a position of a particular government or so forth is something you should look at, because they really, really would like to get their input into as early as possible, but they, you have to fully recognize that they, you can't have an early stage of an ongoing policy discussion and expect the GAC to give you a position, because it's virtually impossible to do it. But they do want to seek ways of doing this, and so that'll be something that's going to be commented on in the final report of the working group when we finish our work. But I just want to let you know that that is a very real concern on the part of the GAC, and anything that can be done to work it out would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much. I have Jeff, Adrian, anyone else? Okay.
So forgive the play on words, says Jeff Newman, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but why don't we do an early warning system for GAC, and not call it advice, but essentially it's the same type of thing where we're just trying to get at the very beginning an understanding of things that may be sensitive in that process. So it's almost taking that early warning concept and applying it to policy development. I know from some of the groups that I chair, if I could know somewhere towards the beginning of the process what issues are going to be sensitive and why, not necessarily advice as to how it would come out in the end, then those are things that we could be cognizant of during the process and figure out ways to bring them in.
Well, that's the exact same concern that they have. And it's a matter of is what is that communication path? How is it opened up? What happens? I can speak from experience in the IP registry world that, for example, in the RIPE NCC, they have government people that are at the policy meetings, and there's a free open discussion. And it's fully understood that this person is not speaking for a given country or maybe speaking for NATO or whatever, but is giving the concern. In the case of Aaron, there has been direct participation by various members of the U.S. government and the Canadian government, different like the RCMP or the U.S. Department of Justice and so forth, and it's fully understood in the conversations that they are expressing those sensitivities, but at the same time are not expressing positions. Also, what's been most beneficial in those processes has also been an education that takes place, because sometimes people have a misconception about what governments do with some things, and so there's been that cross-fertilization there as well. And so the GAC, and that's, I'm speaking as the co-chair of the working group, I'm not a member of the GAC, I don't play one on TV, but the thing is that they have a real concern about how to do that, because they are just as uncomfortable being placed in a position of providing advice at a much later stage when it could have been taken care of, clearing up a discrepancy. So anything that you guys could think of in terms of a way that could open up a participation mode. Now, one of the early attempts to do that was to establish liaisons, and that has never worked because from the GAC perspective, that liaison carries the GAC position with them. But by the same token, I know there have been GAC persons that have been involved in some policy discussions in the GNSO, and they have been very, very pleased with being able to do that. And they're very pleased with the fact that they can bring forth those sensibilities. So I think it's incumbent upon the GNSO as well as the GAC to keep on opening up these exploratory ways that you can express communication. From a liaison perspective, it makes a great deal of sense that liaison would provide information back to the GAC that says that here is what's happening. So this is the early warning type of thing that you're talking about. But then again, they can't do it with a liaison because of the difficulties of a liaison type of person. I think it's really a matter of trying to sit down together and figuring out what is the best way that we can have this open communication path to exist between the GAC and the various policy processes inside the GNSO.
Thank you. I have Adrian, Bertrand, and Bruce.
Thanks, Ray. Just In response to that, does the board, it's a question to the board, does the board see that there are any areas for concern or potential issue with that interaction? Are you bothered by, or you know, under what circumstances would you be bothered by the GNSO interacting with the GAC?
I'm not worried about it at all. In fact, it's healthy.
Okay.
It's extremely healthy because if you're talking about the bottom-up policy process working, it works best if the interactions are as further down in the stack as you can go. And so it works best. The point is that you're not going to get positions from the GAC as well.
No, I understand.
But the idea of exposing sensitivities and all those other ideas that we've been talking about is something they would like to explore and have a keen interest in it.
Yeah, I think it's a difference between input and visibility. And I think what we're talking about here is providing the GAC with visibility and not so much input on that level with respect to liaisons and so on.
And just very quickly on that, of course, the policy development support staff now provides a monthly policy overview and summary for people to just kind of want to see what's going on in the different areas, and that does go to the GAC, and that's sort of a something to help give them a high-level view. But I guess I'd be curious, from your experience, what different ways have you tried to do this? I mean, clearly there's been informal communication on an ongoing basis for years. Have you ever experimented with different formats to bring a little more structure to that?
I can... do you want to... We don't know. We were all rushing in to answer your question, obviously, but we've had liaisons in the past that have not worked out. We've tried to include the GAC in working groups, but the issues that Ray has mentioned of them being uncomfortable with having a GAC sticker on their forehead, you know, when they come to these groups and not being able to talk as a GAC person, so they have to be an individual or not talk at all, which then ends up, you know, being not very useful. We have had that conversation, so it's difficult. So
can I you just said then not very useful, and I think that that's not necessarily true. Going back to my point about visibility, I think there can certainly be a purpose of their involvement, whether the GAC person as an individual or whatever can comment or input. I understand the issue. But I still think their involvement and then taking that information back and getting visibility about what's happening is the key here, rather than necessarily input, although, of course, that's desired.
And just to address the second point of your question, Rod, about a more formalized process, I think that we then need to go into, and we've been talking about this as well, we then need to go into a flowchart of how the interaction between the different SOs and ACs might work within the organization if you want a more formalized process.
Sure. Well, just to be clear, I'm not proposing a more formalized process. I was just more curious about what structures have been attempted. And because, when you have a massive decentralized system like this, a complex decentralized system, it's always interesting to look at, how can you enhance the protocols or the interactions between the groups? And some of that evolves organically or just happens organically, and then sometimes that evolves into structures. And what I hear you saying is there's some level of organic collaboration, but it's not necessarily achieving what you might hope that it would. And the two attempts that have been used don't work. And so it's kind of a question mark, it seems like. But I want to make it clear, I'm not proposing that you change anything in the way you do. And the GAC's manner of feeding into the board is prescribed and defined in the bylaws in a specific mechanism. So, but an interesting conversation, just to... at least for me to learn from.
Bertrand.
Yeah, everybody here knows that it's a topic that is dear to my heart, to say the least. Very, very simply, there is an incredibly growing awareness among all actors in the community and all sides, including the GAC, of the benefits of getting all the different stakeholder groups around the table as early as possible. Not all the time, but at various stages as early as possible. The exact format is not the place to discuss. What I would like to highlight is the link between different processes and different questions. There has been a tremendous amount of work, and Jeff and Jay Scott know that better than anybody, in the PPSC groups on the PDP reform and the working group model. A very important discussion needs to take place in the coming months on how this is to be articulated with the implementation of the ATRT report that specifically makes recommendations on how to increase the interaction, structure the process of the PDP. So how this will be discussed, and this, of course, the implementation of the ATRT report is something that will be looked at very closely by the board. Good interaction between the work that has been done within the GNSO and also the other entities, ALAC and the GAC, on how to foster this interaction in the course of the development of policy is important. The other element is that there is a huge combination between formality and informality. It is true that for most GAC members, if we take the GAC, it is very difficult to go and participate for reasons of formality, but also for reasons of workload. And I experienced that on my own in the last few years. However, there's one thing that could be explored is some evolution in the structure of the physical meetings to make sure that on things that are starting or on issues that are at a certain turning point, there could be cross-community sessions on a topic where the GNSO and the other entities, ALAC and the GAC, would just have a session to say, this is where we are, this is how it works, for awareness and feedback. Doesn't need to be formal, doesn't need to be structured, but just for awareness raising. And so those three elements, like the structure of meetings, the ATRT implementation, and the work you've been doing, needs to be articulated together as much as possible.
One of the things that's interesting, if we a little bit of history on UGTLD, so I often find it gets reinvented as we go along, but since I lived the history, I can recall it. I think back in 2005, the GNSO at the time realised that it would be inefficient for the GNSO to finally give its recommendations to the board and then the board to receive GAC advice on those recommendations. So we were very conscious at that time in the GNSO of briefing the GAC every meeting. And in the early days, back in 2005, 2006, what the GAC realised is they needed to develop some principles, and that led to them actually developing principles for both new GTLDs and who is. So I think that was a very useful start because it got them to focus more at a strategic level, not sort of down into the nitty-gritty. Then what started to happen is where things got dysfunctional is that the GAC would then start picking up these conversations with the GNSO and hearing different things, let's say geographic names, for example, and then provide advice to the board, because that through their GAC communique. But it wasn't even on the agenda for the board, so the board just sort of took it as read but never responded. The GNSO also never responded because it also took it as read, just said, OK, that's useful, we'll take that into account in our thinking. And a lot of the work that was put into the new GTLD process took into account those GAC principles. So the recommendation 6 was in response to the GAC principles. The recommendations around community objection process was in response to the GAC principles around protecting geographic names and things like that. But the GNSO never formally communicated that back to the GAC. It didn't say, hey, principle number 5, this is what we've changed in our policy. So you've got these kind of parallel processes. So the GAC says it's advising the board didn't respond. The GNSO is reading these communiques and iterating as it goes, because that's the way the GNSO works. And then eventually the GNSO finalised its policy and voted on it, thinking that it actually was pretty much in compliance, if you like, with the GAC. But that was never formally signed off. And now, structurally, we have this problem in that we have these advisory committees that in the bylaws talk to the board, and suddenly the board becomes a policy forum, and that's what we're doing this week. And that's broken because this is the policy forum. It shouldn't be the board. And so I think it is something structurally we need to fix. And structurally it's about what Bertrand is saying, is we, and the board's learning this now too, so I can look at it with both layers, but I've got to recognise the GAC works in a different way to this community. You know, this community is rapid fire, iterative, you know, emails, everyone free to sort of participate. People change their positions, you know, on a daily basis. The GAC doesn't change its position. Certainly it's a cycle of every 3 months, but probably 30 years. It takes a long time for them to have a particular. I'm being a little extravagant in my commentary, but it takes them a long time to develop their position, and it doesn't get changed in a hurry because it's taken so much time to develop it. Just as you're not going to change your GNSA policy principles in a hurry because you've had a whole process to get to that. So what I would encourage structurally is that we encourage the GAC to be giving advice to the GNSO formally, and that the GNSO actually formally responds. But this is on the 3-month cycle, so you have a degree of formal communications, but you also have the participation that Ray is talking about, that you do want to have some people from that sector that can participate, I guess, as individuals, because they're not wearing a government hat, that can help advise you. So I'm just sort of saying we need to take the policy forum from the board to the GNSO. In doing that, we've got to work out how does the GNSO more effectively interact with the GAC, given the GAC is a different way of working to the GNSO.
And given that there are no set rules for doing it at the moment. Jamie.
As of informal mechanisms that we had, I understand we had two informal. One was the liaison, and as I am informed, this didn't work very well. The other one that is being put in place right now is the cross-community working groups, and they have some flaws, I think, but they should not be taken as formal bodies. I mean, this is an informal communication, and informal communication is to advance information, not to manifest positions. And this is something that should be taken into account by the board, principally, because this is something that I think it affected the first experiences with the cross-community working groups, which I repute as a good informal communication and advanced communication between the among the community, not only GAC and GNSO, but also ALAC also. It's a good point to be in the other's shoes and to fill the calluses of each other.
Thank you for that colorful image. Jonathan.
Hi, it's Jonathan Robinson. As I'm a relative newcomer via the registry's stakeholder group to the GNSO, but I suppose mine's more of an observation in line, and I can't articulate the detail as effectively as Bruce from his historical knowledge or Bertrand, but it has struck me as a newcomer that this seems to be one of the most powerful themes of what I've observed in my relatively short term on the council, and it's this tension and challenge that seems to be between a desire to advocate and develop informal communications with a desire not to break some very carefully built up structure and processes, and I think it's something which is clear that there is progress being made on, but it's certainly that struck me as a very significant theme in terms of the effectiveness of the working of the organisation and the council and the associated business that's trying to be conducted.
Thank you. I have Ray next.
Let me speak to the matter of the GAC providing advice to a supporting organisation policy forum. That matter, in fact, was discussed in the board GAC working group. And one of the things that the GAC was quick to point out was that it is an advisory committee to the board. And they feel that structurally they only provide advice to the board. So they are very, very reticent and hesitant in whatever term you want to use to not change that. And it's structured that way in the bylaws, and it's set there for a particular reason. Having said that, they still, at the same time, as I've expressed earlier, have got to, are keenly interested in developing ways of getting GAC information, if you will, into the policy process at the earliest level possible. So I don't think that the matter of suggesting that the GAC provide advice to a policy forum of any of the supporting organizations would ever go anywhere with the GAC. And so I think it's better to explore the means by which the exchange of information can occur.
Christina.
Christina Rosette, IPC, and Ray, actually your comments lead into a clarification point that I wanted to follow up on with Bruce. Namely, Bruce, what I'm wondering is when you were referring to formal communication, I suspect what you may have been meaning was direct communication as opposed to formal in the sense of potentially requiring amendments or revisions to the bylaws. Is that right? Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page. Thanks.
Rita was next, and then Carlos.
I think we've kind of come full circle with Ray's comments and Christina's. I was going to say the same thing, which is I think that much like the board doesn't want to do top-down policymaking, we don't want to dictate how this new wrinkle in the process should be done. And I think Jonathan was apt in saying there has been this kind of carefully crafted structure that has worked over the years. But if we think back to sort of the days when the GAC was all behind closed doors, you know, things have been iterating. And I think Ray's got the point, which is the one that we heard in Brussels quite a bit from the GAC. You know, we should really have had these types of communications with the board a long time ago. The fact that we spent 2 days with them in Brussels, I think Bertrand's got the statistic better than I. That's more time than, you know, the GAC spent with the board for the last 10 years. So, you know, I think that it really is about communication. And so the board's just raising this issue with you all as to how should that work, knowing that the governments are starting to take a more public and active role. I think we leave that to you guys who are really in the trenches doing it. What would suit you best? And obviously the GAC's part of that dialogue, but I think it's just something that we all are looking to improve upon as the organization moves forward.
Thank you very much. Carlos.
Thank you, Stefan. Carlos Aguirre, Nominating Committee Appointing in GENESU Council. I want to touch different points mentioned before. When we talk about prioritization, policy development, policies process, competition, when we want to identify the responsible of the problem, like make the board member recently and say is the reseller, we finally are talking about consumers, because especially competition and make the procedures to be effective, the competition, have to do at the end with the consumers. All level of consumers, big companies and individual end users. When we talk about big companies in relation with the defensive domain names, defensive trademarks, when we talk about individual end users, we refer to stability and security and privacy and many other topics. But always we are referring to the consumers. I think we need to put our best efforts on this. In this point, I understand that some measures of the claims made by GAC are interesting, at least. I'm not part of the government, but I understand some claims of the GAC, because governments are who have direct contact with the users and the community. I know that all are interested in launch as soon as possible new GTLDs. But we also need pay attention in who at the end pay and support all the structure, the consumer. For that, I particularly consider very important to take in account, for example, the Just Working Group work. And work made by all who are interested on give knowledge to the end users. I consider at this point very, very important to give outreach about all situations that imply the consumers in order to have a consumer informed. Economic impact of new GTLDs have especially to do with understand the position of the consumers in the new economy. I read many of economical informs made by specialists, and all specialists are part of the whole economy. Internet make a revolution in the economy and generate the new economy. The informs are all about all economy. And particularly, I think it's necessary to understand the position of the consumer, I repeat, not only in the new economy of internet, also it's necessary to have in account the consumer position in the new economy which will be created after new GTLDs.
Carlos, just in the interest of
no more
letting people...
That's all.
Thank you. Bertrand.
Just to piggyback on what Jamie was saying earlier, I'd like to rephrase more bluntly what you actually meant. I know that there is a concern or a fear within the GNSO that the emergence of the cross-community working group is actually threatening the PDP model. And it's a very fair question. I mean, let's be facing it. I've been a strong proponent of cross-community groups. This is something that needs to be addressed because this is not the purpose. So I just wanted to make it absolutely clear. The fear is understood, and it has to be addressed. The second thing goes to the question of the GAC making an advice to the board or to other bodies. I think the example that Bruce gave regarding the principles on new GTLDs, for instance, was a perfect example of something that was actually given at a level that allowed it to be shared with the board, but was immediately taken into account by the GNSO as framework or guiding elements. So the level at which the GAC interacts is also an answer in terms of how it is taken. Whether it is being sent to the board, it doesn't have to be, I believe, formally sent to the board and then the board sends it to the GNSO. I mean, when the GAC makes a communique or makes a statement, it's up for all the different entities to know where it should be integrated or not. And the more at the level of principles, the easier it is to integrate it. But I want to close this by saying the discussion we're having here is a perfect example of the benefit that we would have to have this very discussion also with the ALAC and the GAC in the room. I mean, that topic should be discussed in a completely informal discussion to hear what the GAC would say or what the ALAC would say on the whole debate of the evolution of the working methods. So I hope that in the future, when we discuss the ATRT implementation and all this, we may make, not necessarily in a working group, but a cross-community discussion on this to hear the different sides of the topic.
Thank you. Alan.
Thank you. I just came into this meeting. The meeting immediately prior to this was a meeting between ALAC and the GAC. And in the last 4 years, I've participated in an awful lot of ALAC-GAC meetings and meetings, informal meetings in the hallways between ALAC people and GAC people. And there's always been an interesting, you know, we should talk more, and these are all good, and everyone feels warm and fuzzy. This meeting was different. It was quite clear that there was a real interest in not only saying the words, but following through and trying to find ways within the comfort zones of both of the groups to actually work together and to try to make sure that we benefit from each other's, you know, when we agree with each other, how can we collude, to be blunt, and get changes made? And when we disagree with each other, how can we try to understand them? And both at the formal meeting today and discussions afterwards, I found the tone far more encouraging than I have ever seen before. And so I don't know how these are going to turn out, and I don't know what the mechanisms are we're going to use, but I think the world is changing, and probably for the good. On a related point, the GNSO is just about to approve the new rules for working groups. And in the final report, the ALAC made a comment, which has been rolled into the final draft. And that is, when you reach out, when the GNSO reaches out to try to get participation from other groups, you can't just send emails out to their mailing lists and assume people will respond. You have to do one-on-one, the chair to the chair, or, you know, someone approach a person who is known to be interested in this subject and said, hey, can you work with us? You know, we have to deal with the realities of people, and I think if we use those kind of methods with the new tone that we're seeing from the GAC and from the ALAC and GNSO, I think things may well look up. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Sebastian?
Thank you. To take some points that Carlos raised, I think about the consumer part, it's important that it be shared in the meeting we will have with all community tomorrow. And more generally speaking, I have the impression that the discussion we have, it's we have a puzzle in front of us. Some part of the puzzle go not too badly together, but some other are yet some work to do to go together. And the way ICANN is working on reviewing each part of the organization need one day to take the overall picture and to see how each pieces of the puzzle could fit together. Because the problem we face with cross-constituency working group today, to take the example of the jazz working group, is a shame, because I hope that at the end of the day we would like to have some help for some needy applicant, and we need to do this work. but framework, it's not yet here. In the same time, I hope that this working group, as Carlos says, will be able to deliver as soon as possible something. I will take this opportunity to say my feeling about that is it's important to split what is going on the application guidebook and what is going on the jazz working group. There is no obligation to be at the same line, same line at the departure and at the end. It's two parallel work. One will benefit from the other, but it's not one will be included in the other. I think I listened your comments yesterday after the Rafik report on the jazz group. It's important to say that I would like very much that completely, and then it will allow the jazz working group to go at its pace. But in the same time, we need to have a report. The community need to have a report as soon as possible. My feeling is that if it could be done in the next 2 months, will be great and useful, and not give any problem with the guidebook who will go ahead. To come back to my puzzle image, there are some way we group are working more closely together. Maybe the other could benefit from that. But at the end of the day, we need to find a way to have, as Bertrand said, some meeting where we are all together and we talk together. Not one is presenting something and the other need to be agree or disagree, but we try to find a way to build up together. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. Just in the interest of time and the organization of this meeting, we've got about 20 minutes left and or 15, and I did want to try and address the other issue that we mentioned earlier, which is volunteer overload or workload or fatigue. Thank you. Because I think it's a real danger to the ICANN model as we see it now, as we work it now. So perhaps if we can move on to that. And Jamie, did you want to?
That's exactly what I would bring. I'm delighted that the board brought this, and also the way it was worded as fatigue, I would say exhaustion, and I would say also that is the beginning of the end of the utopia, because we thought that policy making was had two sources of resources. One was staff that was scarce, and the other that was abundant would be the volunteers all over the world that would be delighted to contribute to internet governance, and that's not what we are facing. We see more of the same by the same. And these same guys are overloaded. And I'm a new blood here, but it's something that is not very common. And I think we should give second thought to this. It's not only staff that is overloaded. I think there are many problems that are behind this scarcity of volunteers and this overload of volunteers' work. And one of these is that the main problem that we face here is related to DNS, not internet governance. Okay, so it's DNS and IP, and there is no problem with IP distribution right now. It's running okay. All of our problems are around DNS. So and this is something that at least in many parts of the world doesn't have a strong appeal as a market as it has in the more developed countries. So that's something that I should be taken into account as to why we don't have enough volunteering resources.
I would add that it's not only a problem of the number of volunteers, it's also what we were talking about before, which is just coping with the amount of stuff that's coming at us. No matter how many volunteers there are in the pipeline, the danger is also that because there's too much stuff coming at us, then we can't deal with it seriously and carefully enough to do it justice. So, Zahid, Adrian, Olga.
I'd just like to echo the comments made by my colleague just now. I think he makes a very good point. I, coming from a developing country, I feel that there's more work that can possibly be done when it comes to global outreach and ICANN. And this is not a criticism per se, but I think there's room for improvement. And considering the impact that we're about to have with new GTLDs possibly rolling out in whatever time it is, I think that becomes even more important. I'd like to take an example of some certain board members about a year ago or so. Kathim, for instance, and before him Jean-Jacques, together had tried to sort of launch a process where an experimental developing country outreach global program was possibly going to take place. And low-hanging fruit, just like having a PR campaign, just articles in the press and that those sort of nature, trying to reach out to people who don't usually interact with ICANN. That process seems to have stalled for some reason. I would like to bring the attention to the board that having those sort of experimental processes with developing countries, especially when the developing country steps forward and says, we'll bear the costs. All we want is the intellectual property, I mean the articles or the data, whatever, and we'll disseminate it, are encouraging things, and I think maybe should also be encouraged by the ICANN process itself. It will be very useful to have more volunteers probably join in because they see value, and maybe the new GTLD as one aspect is a great driver for outreach. And again, it is not a criticism. There's been some great work done recently with outreach, and I think maybe more, especially developing countries, would be very helpful. Just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Adrian.
Thanks, Stefan. I just have a question, and excuse my ignorance for the board, but did the board consider the GNSO workload when they make a requirement for a comment or for a task to be performed?
Yes.
They do. How do they seek that input?
Sorry?
How do you get the information from the GNSO in that way? Like, how do you understand our workload and priority?
Through the policy staff, basically.
Okay.
Who give us briefings, in the same way that Rod mentioned in relation to the GAC briefing. We get a detailed monthly briefing on what's going on in the GNSO, and then we talk to the staff. We probably could do more direct. It could be a chair-to-chair conversation, et cetera. We could probably do that better, but there is an attempt made.
Yeah, I was merely asking, is there something we can be doing to give you some indication, some deeper understanding of our workload, because that's only contributing to it. When we get something from the board, to find out why you chose that date, and is there a way that we can push back on that date, and things like that, that sort of thing.
No, you can't push back on that. But yes, more process might be helpful.
Be nice to get that monthly briefing and understand what's going on in the GNSO. I'd like it. Olga.
Thank you, Stefan. About the volunteering exhaustion and the lack of participation, just to remind you that in the GNSO restructuring process, I chaired the working team about constituency and stakeholder working team. We have prepared an outreach document for GNSO to enhance the participation in GNSO, especially from developing countries where I come from. It is an effort of our working team. It's a document that is now for public comments, so I encourage you to review it and to make all comments that you think are necessary to enhance it and make it more broader and better. But we think it's a very good document, and we are just focusing on what you, Jamie, and others have been talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have Jeff, Mike, and Alan. I will close it off there, if I may. So Bruce and Bertrand, I'll close it off there, if I may, so that we can stay on schedule. Jeff.
Thanks, Stefan. So just for full openness and transparency, when the request came to the GNSO Council to do the work on the consumer choice competition, those definitions, it came up on a GNSO Council call. And immediately policy staff said, you know, you have to take this on because the board wants you to take it on, but we don't have any resources, is what policy staff said. We have no resources to help you unless you drop something that you guys are otherwise doing. So here we were faced with a forced choice. You have to take this work because the board gave it to you, and you have to drop something you want to work on because the board gave it to you and policy staff can't support us. That's a big problem for us, and it was a shocking statement to us. And I don't mean to throw anyone under the bus here, but, you know, I guess I already did.
excuse me while I'm
But I just want
forward, reverse forward.
But I just want you to know what we were faced with on that call when we were told that we had to take this work on. So I do think increased communication, not just with the policy staff, but with chair to chair or leadership to leadership would be an excellent suggestion and a way to move forward.
Mike.
Thanks. And Jeff, that's an intriguing conundrum, because at the moment we have ATRT recommendations which suggest formalizing comment processes even further and creating new structures and comment, re-comment, you know, notice of policymaking versus general comments, creating more structures, more process, professionalizing the organization to a large extent. And I'm all for professional organizations, and like you as a lawyer by training, it's how I make a living, by engaging in professional processes. At the same time, your point is well taken, is some of what we do needs to recognize that for some people over here, it may be a job, but it's also a passion. And that as much as our salary may involve engaging in these processes, the vim and the vigor and the willingness to engage in after-hours conference calls and weekends and travel and all of the rest is not simply because you're being paid for it, and some of the people don't get paid for it at all. So I think the point is very well taken, and I think the opportunity to vent is useful. I think the opportunity to engage and to have some of that informal leadership-to-leadership engagement is useful. You know, on that specific issue, I'd rather not comment other than to say the work is important. Is it urgent? Well, that's not a call that I'm going to make. It certainly is important, and we'd love for you to do it. But, you know, where the prioritization needs to happen and how we engage to affect that is something that's worthwhile doing. All I know is that we're stuck at the moment in a tension between overly professionalizing the organization to an extent that we lose some of the volunteer soul that we've had in it. And if we don't keep the balance right, we run the risk of being overtaken by professionals only who engage in this only to the extent that they're being paid for it.
Thank you very much. So I have a real problem now, and this is where my job gets difficult, because I have Alan, Bruce, and Bertrand. I'd ask for the queue to be closed off after that, and we have 5 minutes left to accommodate you three. So if you can try and be brief, that would be appreciated. Alan, you're next.
I'll be very brief. Jeff covered to a large extent what I was going to raise, and I want to carefully differentiate something which may have been confused, though. There are two different issues. One is whether council and its volunteers and the GNSO itself can find the resources to work on additional things. The other thing is whether there are staff resources allocated to do the work along with us. And we may have control over the former. We have no control over the latter. And we would expect, as the organization gets more professional or we are given more and more tasks which we're told have some importance, and maybe not urgency but importance, that staff resources allocated to it go along with the increase in requirements to do specific things on a more professional level.
Thank you, Adam. Bruce.
Yeah, I noticed the board resolution requested advice. It didn't demand advice. on that particular point, the timing of March was really that that general area, we lack any measures or definitions in our strategic plan, which I personally believe is a problem. And the next iteration of that strategic plan is for approval for this meeting. So that's so the issue is we don't have those things, and the timing was we have a strategic plan to approve at this meeting. Now, the fact that it doesn't go in the strategic plan this meeting, to me, is not a huge issue because it's never been in any other strategic plan we've approved. But so that's the first timing. The second timing is that we have a need to review the new GTLD process, which will be 1 year after it's kicked off. So I guess that's perhaps the next critical date. If the program does get kicked off, I would think it's useful timing-wise to have some advice well in advance of us doing that review, which could be a year out. So certainly I think a dialogue like this could... And I know on the call that we were going to have, I think we ran out of time to talk this through. But that's kind of the timing. So some of these things... are certain time slots and events, and then if you miss that time slot, like you miss this year's strategic plan document, then you know the next opportunity is next year's strategic plan document. So timing-wise, I'm not too concerned. And also, I just say it's a request, so you still have to manage within your own priorities whether you want to respond to that. The board can also decide whether it wants to prioritise staff just to come up with those measures themselves. We could do that, and we can put it out for public comment. It's really just an opportunity, I think, because often we get criticised because we go and do stuff and we don't ask advice. So I thought it was funny this time we asked for advice, but then we got criticised because you don't have any resource to give the advice. So just be clear, it's a request for advice, not a demand for advice. And then the timing-wise, it would have been nice if we could get in the strategic plan, but recognise we're all flat out and everyone's comments taken on board there. In terms of the next iteration that's most useful would either be next year's strategic plan, the next iteration, or hopefully in enough time that we can design a review process for new GTLDs because the same measures are needed.
When you said if, did you mean when?
Reflecting the language in the affirmation of commitments that uses the word if.
Bertrand.
I wanted to develop a little bit the question of the difficulty of closure in multi-stakeholder processes at each stage, which is a reason why the processes last longer. But I've abused my speaking time a little bit, and I think Jamie had a point that he really wanted to make,
well,
so I'll quit.
Can I go to Katim if we have time? We've got to stop in 1 minute, so, you know.
Thanks so much, Stefan. I'll be very brief here. I found the exchange very interesting, especially when Zahid was talking about the need to have more outreach in developing countries. And I think this is particularly pertinent in view of the fact that we're clearly talking about whether you want to call it volunteer exhaustion or volunteer fatigue. And so consider for a moment the fact that Africa is almost at about 1 billion people, and we still have in all of Africa just about 3 ICANN-accredited registrars. That clearly means that I think there's room for growth, and I think what we need to do is, in addition to outreach, you know, do outreach and whatever communication efforts and, that we do out there, do it with the perspective of also trying to increase the market, trying to get the African industries much more involved in what ICANN is doing, because I firmly believe that if the Africans also have as many registrars, proportional registrars as they can get, you can also expect that they will, in their own self-interest, be willing to come forward and volunteer just as many of you are sitting here today.
Thank you very much. I'll bring it to a close here. Sorry, Jamie. And thank you very much once again, the board members, for coming to see us, for spending an hour and a half with us. It's very appreciated. Godspeed with the GAC, message from Adrian Kindris. And Peter or Rod, if you want to make any closing remarks.
Sure, I'll make a few. Thank you very much. First, very productive session. It's really useful to hear all those views. And just to summarize some of what I got in the last round there, starting with Jamie, is fatigue, maybe exhaustion is a better term. And finally, it evolved a flat out over here somewhere. But the huge load is clear. And Olga mentioned the narrow field of volunteers. And so that raises questions in my mind about what can we do to try to expand, do more recruiting, more outreach, awareness. Zahid talked about that a little bit with one of the programs that was discontinued in a developing country. Alan talked further about the scarce resources. And Jeff talked about demands, additional demands from the board without resources. On that one, at least, I'm glad that Bruce seems to have taken the GNSO off the hook. So there seems a little pressure relief. But I know when Stefan and I and the other SO and AC leaders met informally for a few hours in a lovely dinner on Friday, we talked about the commonality across the organization, across the SOs, the ACs, the board, and the staff of just exhaustion, just overload. I mean, normally we talk in many circumstances about drinking from the fire hose, and here it's like drinking from, you know, 10,000 fire hoses. And it's just, yeah, I wasn't going to quite say that out of respect for some people across the Pacific right now. But yeah, it's a huge load. So I think that we've got to really think about as a community. It's something I'll give thought to. Our new chief operating officer, Akram, is a very strong systems engineer and manager and processes, but I think we've got to really think about how do we change some of what we do, some of our processes as individual groups and collectively to get a higher level of output, because we're not going to get more time, right? Staff's not going to get more time. They're, you know, we have a wealth of passion, okay? And the flame of passion burns in your community, in the staff, and the board, but every flame can only withstand so much wind. And so I think we've got to figure out how can we evolve some of our practices and try to get a little bit more efficient in some of what we do. And I don't really have the answers there, but I think it would be something that I hope that we can have discussions about moving forward for everyone's sake. But the point is well taken from your side, and particularly the great volunteer effort, you know, that all of you make in moving things forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, GNSO Council members. We're now expected in the colonial room, which is on the mezzanine floor. Go up one floor to go and speak with the GAC. And this is now.